Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Chris Wright. I'm from Swiss Re, and I'm very pleased to be able to chair this afternoon's session, which is entitled The Life Reinsurer of the Future. So I have two great speakers this afternoon, but before I introduce them properly, a little bit of housekeeping to remind you of. So the session will last for 50 minutes. We'll have at least 10 minutes at the end for questions. If you do have a question, please use the microphones in the centre of the room and identify yourself before you ask your question. A reminder that the session's being recorded as well. And at the end of the session, please do submit your feedback via the Summit Connect app as well. So our first speaker today is Stuart Mainland. Stuart is a senior manager in the Actuarial Services Group of Ernst & Young in Sydney. In his 5 years with EY, he's worked with clients in the UK, Germany, Australia and New Zealand on various risk, capital and financial reporting projects. Recently, Stuart has worked on various reinsurance engagements, both at the group and Australia level, including assisting with a past performance review of a reinsurer's global life portfolio. Prior to joining EY, Stuart spent 8 years in the UK with a large UK life insurer leading their corporate pension pricing team. Our second speaker today is Shweta Krishna. Shweta is a manager in the Actuarial Services Group for EY in Sydney, providing actuarial consulting advice to the financial services industry. She has over 7 years' experience in the life and wealth management industries. She's assessed reinsurance tenders for a major life insurer and has worked in the capital management area for a large reinsurer. Prior to joining EY at the end of 2012, Shweta worked in valuation and capital management roles at BT Financial Group and in a risk management role for Macquarie Bank. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Stuart.
Thanks, Krish, for that introduction. And also thank you to coming to our session. I realise that straight after lunch on the second day is something of the graveyard shift by all accounts, but we've got quite a good marketing advantage. I think this is the only room that's got bottles of water right in front of you, so I think I'm sure you've came for the session, though, not for the water. The reason that we wanted to talk about this topic today is we think that life reinsurance, it's been undergoing quite a bit of change in recent years. There's been quite a lot of volatility in the market in terms of performance for the life reinsurers. But also we now have a new entrant and also a very recent entrant into the life reinsurance landscape for Australia. So this seems like quite a pertinent time to sort of take that step back and have a think about, well, what does the medium term actually hold for life reinsurance in Australia, and what is it that reinsurers could perhaps be doing about that? Although we've spoken to quite a number of reinsurers about this to get their views, we've also spoken to a number of insurers. One thing I should say about this topic is it's a very subjective topic. There's no right or wrong answer. As actuaries, we should be pretty used to calling the future wrong. So I think this is a very subjective topic, so the views very much just represent our own thoughts, backed up by some of the sort of evidence that we'll talk you through in this presentation. But we're very keen to get your thoughts at the end of this, whether you agree, disagree, whether you have any further comments or questions that you would like to ask. So moving on to the agenda, it's a very straightforward agenda for today. So we're going to start off by talking about the reinsurance market for life reinsurers in Australia today. So looking a little bit of why would insurers place or cede business to reinsurers? What are the drivers for that? What have they been historically? We'll look a little bit at the business mix for life reinsurers at the moment and how that's changed in the recent past. And then we'll get onto the sort of X-rated slide, which is how that business has been performing recently. And after that, Shweta will then take us through have a look at other jurisdictions, life reinsurance, how that operates in other markets, whether there's anything we can learn from that when we do a comparison of that to the Australian market. And then we'll move on to talking about opportunities and threats that are on the horizon, the sort of dark clouds and blue skies, if you like. And once we've set all that up, we'll sort of bring it to the conclusion of what we think the medium term looks like for life reinsurers, and then also some thoughts about what life reinsurers need to be doing. So very much the focus is going to be looking backwards, looking around, and then looking forwards. So starting off by looking backwards, just in terms of what have been the drivers for reinsurance being placed in the past, and how do they stack up now, and are they still relevant? Life reinsurance has been a feature of the Australian market for well over half a century now. Reinsurers started to set up their own offices here back in the 50s and 60s. And I guess the insurance landscape now is totally different to what it would have looked like then. But one of the reasons historically for insurers placing business with life reinsurers, the first one that we've got there is around access to underwriting and claims expertise. The reinsurers had the expertise from working with different clients in a jurisdiction, but also they had expertise centrally at the group level. So they were able to provide the underwriting manuals to smaller insurers who perhaps didn't have the level of statistical significance in their data to be able to come up with decisions for underwriting or to appropriately manage their claims experience. The Australian market in the last 10 to 15 years, there's been significant consolidation amongst insurers, also amongst reinsurers. And what that's meant is that the average company size in Australia, the average insurance company size, is much larger than it was historically. And so the largest insurers now are in a position where they have access to significant amounts of data of their own without needing perhaps quite as much expertise coming from the reinsurers. However, one thing, when we put that to some of the reinsurers when we were doing our interviews, one of the comments that came back was that quite often the underwriting manual and the claims management expertise that the reinsurer might not be a factor in winning business, but it's certainly in the past been a factor in retaining business when an insurance company has been considering changing reinsurers. So our argument for that would be that it is still relevant in the modern market right now. We don't see it as being more relevant than it might have been in the past, as opposed to the next point. The next point here is on capacity that the primary market doesn't have. That's particularly relevant for group risk, where you can have very large industry funds where the primary insurer is looking to pass some of that risk because they don't want that huge exposure to one particular industry. The size of industry funds has been increasing year after year for the last decade. So we would say that this is even more of a factor now in why insurance companies would be placing business with reinsurers than it has historically. The third driver for placing reinsurance that we've got here is reducing earnings volatility and the capital strain. So companies today still have large volatility when it comes to claims experience, particularly around the DAC on retail business. They have that risk when it comes to lapses. And there's also the large capital strain that companies currently have when they're writing risk business in the market today. And so by reinsuring, they get that reinsurance commission to release some of the DAC. That's still highly relevant today. The very recent transaction that's quite large, one of the comments that was made about that was that it was going to be release $500 million of capital. So certainly it seems that that's one thing that insurance companies will still look to from reinsurance companies. The fourth driver for placing business with reinsurers. Traditionally, quite often, the reinsurers will be more aggressive in their pricing and their outlook when it comes to risk. There's a number of reasons for that. Probably the most obvious is that reinsurers are able to diversify their risks, not only across other products and other cedents, but they can do it globally across different regions, and they can also do it across their property and casualty and their life reinsurance books. So that ability to diversify their risk has allowed them to perhaps be a bit more aggressive. Additionally, reinsurers see themselves as data experts and also capital management experts, with good reason. And so life reinsurers have been very good at optimising their capital management in the past to allow them to have that that greater aggression and greater efficiency, I should say, when it comes to pricing. So that's still highly relevant today. The next point is on reshaping risk. It's quite a common feature in the market today is around surplus reinsurance that might get added on top of quota share or sometimes might be standalone. That's becoming even more common now. We would argue that that's down to CPS 220 and the recent changes around risk management frameworks. Companies tend to quantify their risks and their risk appetite statements more than they perhaps have historically. And when they've quantified that risk, that gives them something a bit more obvious to be looking for when they're looking to place reinsurance and something to measure and monitor as they go along. So that feels to us as if that's even an even greater driver for placing reinsurance, placing business with reinsurance than it has been historically. The final point here is around global technical insights. This was an interesting one. Reinsurers quite often will advertise these insights that they're able to provide from central teams that they might have that are working on crunching data for data analytics or talking about experiences that they've got in other countries. There was a perception when we spoke to a few companies that it was useful to know, useful to have, but it was very much a marketing device, and it wasn't something that would necessarily lend itself to placing reinsurance with a company. So we've marked that down as still being relevant today. Shweta is going to talk about the future, where I think our view would be a bit different. So the sort of summary from this slide would be that we would say that the reasons for placing reinsurance historically are at least as relevant in the current market, if not more so. So that's why insurance companies would place business with reinsurers. This next slide looks at the amount of business that's been placed with reinsurers over the last 15 years. So this is the percentage of the in-force premium in the market across group risk, retail DI, retail lump sum. And what you can see from this chart, based on the Plan for Life statistics, is that the cession rate's been roughly 30%, moving around a little bit, little bit of volatility there, but generally it's hovered around that 30% mark over the last 15 years. I suppose it's quite interesting to then start looking at the mix underneath that, to look under the bonnet. So starting off with individual lump sum. So you can see here that the cession rates, starting off at 30% in the early 2000s, have tailed off quite significantly over the last few years, down to around about 20% there. So less of the lump sum, individual lump sum business is now ceded to reinsurers proportionally than it was in the past. Group risk, however, has shown a slight increase. There's quite a lot of volatility in that. There's probably an element of seasonality in the numbers, but you can see that there's a general upwards trend there from just below 35% to somewhere between 35 and 40%. And then finally, on retail disability income, the cession rate there has increased quite steadily from about 20% up to, that's around about 27-28%. So I suppose the interesting point around this is that the business mix has changed quite significantly for reinsurers over the last decade and a half. And you have to be careful about cause and effect here, but one thing that you might consider here is that the most profitable part of the Australian market over that decade and a half, the individual lump sum business, is the business which is now, the risk is being retained more by insurers than it was historically, whereas conversely for the other two product types which have had their problems, particularly in recent years, cession rates have generally increased. There's a case study that Shweta will look at a bit later which touches on a similar theme. So these are the sort of relative business volumes. In terms of absolute volumes, it's increased significantly over the last 10 years. The compounded annual growth rate is around about 11%, so it's growing at roughly three times the rate of inflation. Per the previous slide, the cession rates have been pretty constant over that time, so the main cause of that has been underlying insurance sales. But I guess what this does is it gives some idea for why this market's quite attractive and why there's been a recent entrant and a likely new entrant on the horizon. The premium growth has been exceptionally strong over that 10-year period, to the point where there would be a reasonable argument that the market can probably sustain additional entrants. So, very interesting that volumes have grown, but the question is at what price? I mean, you've probably seen similar slides to this over the last day and a half. I've certainly seen that group slide at least twice now in different sessions. I think the bit that's interesting about the way it's presented here is this is the numbers that Ian Loughlin from APRA was presenting just a month or two ago, and he split the profitability between reinsurers and the direct insurers. So what you can see looking at the individual DI business is that in the years where there's been profits, the amount of profit the reinsurers have made has been quite thin, whereas in the years where there's been big losses, those losses have largely been borne by the reinsurers. There's a very similar story on the group risk side, where reinsurers have tended to be bearing the losses but not sharing in the upside quite as much as the insurers have. So why would that be? In that session that Ian Loughlin gave, he didn't go into any more detail about why he thinks that might be. Some reasons we would put forward. So these are sort of more specific points about why the reinsurers have tended to be bearing those losses, whereas there's been numerous sessions about why there's been losses in aggregate. The first point, or first suggestion we would make, is around the alignments of interest. Quite often the reinsurance commission has been very aggressive in recent years, to the point where the break-even point for insurers is radically different to what the reinsurer's break-even point would be in terms of the loss ratios. And also, for some group schemes, the amount that was being ceded to reinsurers was very large, and so the insurers didn't have quite as much skin in the game, if you like. I mean, I think it's, again, you don't want to read too much into that in some ways, but I think it's quite natural that you would expect two companies who have their own corporate structures and their own responsibilities to the shareholders to have their different focuses on what's going to be important. I mean, in the long term, insurers have to maintain that relationship with reinsurers, so I don't think there's any getting away that would suggest insurers would just ignore business where they're ceding most of the risk. But in terms of that balance of limited resources for claims management and for underwriting, it might just lead to different outcomes or different interests between the reinsurer and the insurer. There's also been very competitive market conditions with a new entrant joining 4 years ago and another new entrant about to join now. That's partly feeds into that first point around the aggressive reinsurance commission terms that have been offered. There was a session yesterday where one of the direct insurers commented that when they were getting the prices back from the reinsurers and comparing it against their own assessments of risk, they were quite different, and they found it quite hard to bridge between the two. And that's probably a feature of a highly competitive market and softening pricing conditions. The third point here, the perennial problem for reinsurers is that they have less data than the insurer does. They also don't have it in real time the way that the insurer tends to have it. So that can lead to an additional time lag for reinsurers to realise what's happening, what the experience is with the underlying business compared to the insurer. We have seen reinsurers taking quite a lot of steps over the last 2 or 3 years to improve the quality of the data and the timeliness of the data that they're receiving from insurers. It's perhaps not received quite as much attention in the past from reinsurers as it now does. So that's certainly a reason we would, or a contributory factor to why reinsurers would be the ones bearing the losses. The fourth point there, on definition scope creep, I guess that's a common theme for both insurers and reinsurers, but one reinsurer did a session not so long ago for the Institute where they talked about how the terms and conditions and the way they're being interpreted has loosened over the recent years, which is one thing, you know, that's being influenced by lawyer activity and court cases. But there's not been a commensurate impact on the price as a result. So that scope creep is a reason for some of the losses recently. And quite a lot of those decisions will tend to be getting made by the insurer. And so that knowledge of the way the claims have been treated is sometimes just that little bit less obvious to the reinsurer than it is to the insurer. And then the final point here, I mean, this is just a relatively obvious point, but on group schemes, the guarantee period for the terms tended to be multi-year in the past. So even when it was quite clear that the experience was quite adverse, the reinsurer and also the insurer to the super fund were locked into that pricing framework for a further time period. Those guarantee periods tend to be reducing now to make the pricing a bit more flexible. But just to summarise this slide, I mean, it's a fairly obvious point in some ways, but in a highly competitive environment, you need that pricing discipline, and that's quite relevant for the short to medium term for life reinsurers at the moment. So that very much summarises where reinsurance is today for life reinsurers in Australia. What we'll do now is just have a look at some other countries, and Siveta will take us through that.
Thank you, Stuart. Hi, everyone. Now we will go through some of the reinsurance markets around the globe, and we will see whether they offer any indicators as to how the Australian reinsurance market may develop. Firstly, we have North America. North America is one of the largest reinsurance markets in the world, and all reinsurers operating in Australia have a material presence in the U.S. And business in the U.S. has historically been written on a level premium basis, but new business tends to be more skewed towards yearly reviewable. And the U.S. market has been problematic for reinsurers for a number of reasons in the past, and some of this is an outcome of the U.S. gap, where the losses tend to bleed out for a number of years as opposed to the assumption changes hitting it in one go. As a country that has experienced significant losses, it's perhaps worth a closer case study, and we'll bring this up in a couple of slides. Next, we have UK and Ireland. UK and Ireland is a fairly unique market, and cession rates are extremely high in the UK. They're about the 80% mark, as you can see. And some of the drivers for this include the reinsurers having capital advantages over insurers, and this is at least until Solvency II kicks in. The other apparent reason seems to be that reinsurers have tended to have a more aggressive view of claim rates in comparison to insurers. So in the UK, the high cession rates has been in place for a number of years, but this hasn't quite come back to bite reinsurers in the same way as it has in the US market. One of the factors that does differentiate the UK market is that premiums tend to be leveled rather than stepped, and therefore you don't have the problems associated with churning and so on. Next, we have continental Europe. Continental Europe has a myriad of markets sitting underneath it, and this makes it a little bit difficult to draw comparisons from. However, one common theme that does emerge is that it consists of a number of small to medium-sized players, and it's dominated by surplus reinsurance over proportional reinsurance. And this is probably what explains the lower cession rates in continental Europe. As you can see there, it's around less than the 10% mark. Finally, we have Asia. Asia, similar to Europe, have a number of different markets sitting underneath it with its own unique characteristics. And with Asia, data tends to be less granular, and there's also not as much regulatory arbitrage that exists in Asia in comparison to other markets. So while Asia is closest to Australia in terms of geography, it's probably the least informative when we are comparing it to the Australian market. So overall, to summarize, what do we learn from the previous slide? So there are certain characteristics that seem to drive high cession rates, which are at the top end of the slide, and there are certain characteristics that seem to drive low cession rates, which are at the bottom end of this slide. And for Australia, we will see that what are some of these market features that do exist and what are some of these market features that don't exist. So as you can see there, there's a cluster of tick marks in the middle area there. So as you can see, factors such as new business strain and proportional reinsurance dominating the market does exist. However, some of the other market features do not. And it's interesting to note that a lot of these market features are actually outside the reinsurer's control. We then ask the question, what are some of these market features that are likely to change in the future? And of the market features we have down there, some of the features that we do expect to change include the likely impact of new business strain, and this would be a result of the IFRS 4 Phase 2 changes, which is still a fair while away, but with the rules around contract boundaries, the DAC will be restricted to 1 year, and it would create a higher new business strain for insurers. The other area, as Stuart earlier, he mentioned there's a new potential reinsurer in the market, and this might change the aggressiveness of pricing from reinsurers. So overall, this largely qualitative analysis suggests that we are unlikely to see a large-scale movement in overall cession rates in Australia. Next, we'll be touching on some of the dark clouds that lie ahead. The first 2 points, Stuart covered them in a bit of detail, so I'm just going to skip over those. And to summarize, because of the consolidations that have happened in the last 15 to 20 years in Australia, the role of reinsurers in future is going to diminish as far as expertise in the form of providing underwriting and claims management services exist. The next dark cloud that is on the horizon is alternative sources of funding. So offshore reinsurers can potentially pose a competition in the market. So there's nothing under the current regulation, there's nothing preventing offshore reinsurers to be knocking on insurers' door in Australia, even though the reverse might not be true. The other potential area is institutional investors seeking returns. Again, this is something that is not taken off in Australia so much, but globally, the use of capital markets is quite prevalent. One of the examples is Aegon in the Netherlands, who's set up, worked with Deutsche Bank to set up a $12 billion longevity swap directly with the capital markets. There's also other examples that exist in the form of catastrophe bonds, and we've seen catastrophe specialist catastrophe bond funds being set up internationally. The last point on this slide is around changes to remuneration structure. So with the Trowbridge recommendations, if a level commission structure is mandated, this would mean that the lower upfront cost of commission will make insurance sold via financial advisors less capital intensive, and it would diminish the role of reinsurers to a certain extent. However, we feel that this should better align incentives between reinsurer and insurer to a certain extent, for example, managing lapse experience. The last point I would like to make in relation to dark clouds is a case study on the U.S. market. As we can see there, this shows the cession rates for the last 20 years. And during the early 90s, there was quite a bit of aggressive pricing that existed, and then there were market corrections in the form of pricing increases, and then cession rates tended to go down. So one interpretation would be that once the market had corrected, it was perceived as being more attractive to insurers who chose to retain a larger share for themselves. And there's potentially some parallels we can see there with the Australian market, where Stuart had brought up the slide showing the cession rates for the group business and IP business. So next we'll touch on some of the blue skies. So it's not all doom and gloom for reinsurers. And there's a number of areas of opportunities that we see. As we've seen in a couple of other sessions, lessons have been learned around the group risk business, and there's been significant price increases that have happened. And the market is certainly looking like a place which will be a more viable place to earn profits in comparison to previous times. The second point there with the IFRS 4 changes, we feel that this is probably not going to impact reinsurers as much because they operate at a global level, whereas insurers are mostly operating locally. As a result, we feel that reinsurers can step in there to finance the new business strain this is going to create. The third point is around global connectivity. And while this sounds like a cliche, and we feel that there's a number of advantages that reinsurers can offer in the form of centralization of resources and having centers of excellence in the modern world as big data rises, and this will probably become more crucial. The second last point there is around the demographic changes. So with the aging population, products such as annuities are only going to become increasingly prevalent, and reinsurers can definitely offer advantages and expertise given their global experience in this area. The last point, it's quite important. The direct channels have enjoyed a significant increase in market share in recent times. The proportion of life insurance sales sold through the direct channels has lifted by nearly 20% in the last 5 years in Australia. And this should definitely be good news for reinsurers because we've seen supermarkets enter into life insurance, and if companies such as Google start selling life insurance, then reinsurers would be considered the logical partners with which these companies would choose to explore and exploit these opportunities. I hope I've left you feeling a bit more positive after this slide. Next, I'll hand over to Stuart for some closing remarks.
Okay, so we've looked backwards, we've looked around, and we've looked forward. So where does that get us to? So the view that Shweta and I came to is that we're pretty positive for the outlook for life reinsurance. So while the consolidation of insurers might have meant that they have access to much larger data than they had in the past, and although there's threats on the horizon from, there's a session after this on offshore reinsurance, there was a session this morning on alternative forms of risk transfer. So there's a number of dark clouds there, but I mean, at the very heart of all of this, per that very first slide that we had, the underlying reasons for reinsuring business and transferring risk still remain, and volume growth has been very stable and very positive over the last few years. So we believe that the outlook for reinsurance for life reinsurers in Australia is very strong. We do think that there might be a change in terms of the mix of business over future years. So we've had a couple of examples where there's perhaps a correlation that can be seen between the cession rates and the stage in the pricing cycle that different products might be at. But overall, we believe it remains attractive. It was interesting when we spoke to some of the reinsurers and asked them about the perception of the Australian market at the global level. We had expected there to be a bit of hesitancy around it, maybe a bit of reluctance to go much further. But that didn't seem to be the case. It seems that there was a feeling globally that the Australian market was now correcting. It moved to a harder part of the pricing cycle. One of the presenters yesterday suggested it had perhaps been too hard from the perspective of reinsurers. But globally, there seems to be a lot of positivity. And when you look at some of the other markets that are out there, I mean, places like the UK, there's not much more growth to be established there. Cession rates are already up at 80-90% there, so there's not going to be a lot of growth in the UK. Markets like Asia, there will be growth, but it's going to be hard fought. There's a lot of language barriers, cultural barriers, regulatory barriers to overcome. So Australia offers quite a good diversification away from the UK and the US and continental Europe. So overall, we are very positive. I guess the sort of takeaways for reinsurers from our perspective, the first one here is around pricing discipline. There was a slide earlier where we talked about the causes of losses for reinsurers, and I think a lot of effort and work has been undertaken in the last 2 to 3 years to rectify those problems, certainly in the group risk space. So with a new entrant on, coming onto the horizon, and I guess one way to establish volume quite quickly is in the group market, the need to maintain discipline is going to be paramount for reinsurers to avoid slipping back to the pricing practices that that became apparent 3 years ago. However, related to that is the second point on capital efficiency. This is an area where reinsurers have been very strong. They have that ability to retrocede risk to other regulatory regimes and minimise the capital burden, and quite often transactions can be can hinge on that sort of efficiency. So being able to maintain that capital efficiency going forward is going to be very important, particularly in the world where you have the International Association of Insurance Supervisors who are looking at classifying some globally systemic important reinsurers, and with that would likely come additional capital requirements. The third, perhaps a slightly more controversial point on this slide, would be around the opportunities in the direct market. The direct market's probably not taken off in the way that some might have expected. Certainly when you come to these sessions every year, there's always a session talking about Google entering into the space of insurance and commoditizing the market. But we already see the supermarkets dabbling perhaps in this space at the moment. And I guess insurers perhaps will be reticent to partner up with these waterfront insurance providers. We'd probably prefer not to target that area of the market. So potentially that will be a part of the insurance market where direct writers don't want to participate, and they won't feel competition from reinsurers who may want to participate in that. And we've already started to see that with a number of reinsurers. And then the final point here, I mean, I suppose this is really directly related to the offshore reinsurance risk. These value-add activities that the reinsurers offer around claims management, underwriting and insights, that's going to be a key way to differentiate themselves from just being purely about provision of capital and transfer of risk. So being able to differentiate themselves in that way will help the local reinsurers who are registered in Australia keep something a little bit different. So in the consultancy space, we quite often see different regions connecting up to each other and being able to assist clients by providing people from different countries. And I get the sense that in the reinsurance space that hasn't quite been the same. It's not been quite as obvious how that would work, even though for major transactions, reinsurers tend to be very good at being able to provide centralised expertise to the local teams. But being able to jump on board in terms of things like data analytics, big data, being able to see insights from other regions and being able to bring that across to the local market, that'll be a way for the local reinsurers to distinguish themselves a little bit more from pure capital and risk transfer. So I realise that we've perhaps run slightly over, but hopefully we've still got some time, because as I say, this is a very subjective topic, so we'd be very keen to get views for or against anything that we've said so far, or any questions or other comments.
You can hear me. So yeah, if there are any questions from the floor, please come up to the mic.
Rob Miller-Hennick, thank you for that. That was very, very interesting. From my perspective, I'm interested in whether or not you've observed from a direct insurer perspective whether there was a significant range in the level of importance of reinsurance to various direct insurers within the Australian market.
A couple of insurers, and what came across was mainly for smaller insurers that hello? Yep. Yeah, so we spoke to a couple of insurers, and what came across was that I think some of the smaller insurers valued reinsurance services such as underwriting and claims management more than larger insurers. When it came to decision-making around tenders, it seemed to us that price was definitely the most important factor. But if there were competing reinsurers with the same price, then some of the other factors became more important.
I think for quite a few companies, it's a trade-off in terms of the return on equity that they can get versus the overall profit that they might be able to receive. So I think quite often it depends on the internal measures that insurance companies have. But I mean, there have been cases in the last 15 years where some insurers have ceded huge amounts to the reinsurance companies because they just found that the reinsurance rates on offer A, made their products more competitive, and B, it's simply by ceding that risk, they received a huge capital injection, which was perhaps in excess of what they were expecting to realise if they retained the risk.
Rizwan Ali from MetLife. With the volatility in the group insurance market, have you seen any increased demand for stop-loss cover?
Not necessarily stop-loss. Certainly seen or became aware of a few cases where surplus reinsurance was being tagged on, and that was being driven primarily by risk appetite statements. So I'm not aware of stop loss seeing a resurgence. I would guess there would maybe be a bit of natural hesitancy around that from a reinsurer's perspective, but I don't know if anyone in the audience might have an alternative view on that.
My gut feel is that there's also been an increasing number of profit share arrangements that have been added to group schemes. And I guess that's a good thing because it helps align the incentives between the insurers and reinsurers a bit closer.
Questions out there? We've got a couple more minutes.
Hi, Andrew Gill from Pacific Life Re. You mentioned IFRS 4 a couple of times during the presentation. I'm interested in your views as to how you think that's going to change the retail market in particular, particularly given most reinsurers, be they European or American, tend to report on US GAAP, where a lot of the changes going through IFRS 4 won't be going through. So therefore we'll be able to hold the DAC for a longer period of time. Do you see reinsurers taking on more and more of that financing risk and lapse risk?
Yes, and also the contract boundaries issue with IFRS 4 is a relatively localised issue, as I understand it. It's quite related to YRT stepped premiums. So reinsurers who have a global balance sheet for which Australia might make up a small proportion would be able to absorb that higher new business strain. There's also a question around how you interpret what the contract is, I guess, because for the reinsurer, it's actually the reinsurance contract that you would be looking at in terms of classification and contract boundaries rather than the underlying insurance contracts. So we do think there's potential opportunities. We had that as quite a large opportunity when we were preparing this, but then with the Trowbridge report that came out and the push towards reduced initial commission, it's likely to lead to lower new business strain for the insurers. So that mechanism for our need for capital release and reducing the new business strain for insurers, that there's sort of these two competing elements of Trowbridge and IFRS 4. So it's probably a bit difficult to say which is going to win out, but as someone said at an earlier session, Trowbridge is far more likely to happen in the near future than IFRS 4.
Last call for questions. Got one more minute. Right, I do have one for you, Shweta, as well, very quickly. You mentioned big data, and just wondered how significant a role do you see that playing in a reinsurer's competitive advantage in future?
A couple of other sessions have touched on this already. Big data is going to play an increasingly important role. I think we've seen a number of examples globally. For example, in South Africa, there's the lifestyle products, and there's also increasing use of big data in models for underwriting decisions. Channels, for example. So it is definitely an area where reinsurers can tap into.
All right, so we're out of time now. So just a quick reminder about the feedback via the Summit Connect app. And please join me in thanking Stuart and Shweta.